This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, October is not only renowned as Shocktober in the stock market for the wild swings that we see, and people are not only going sober for October, it's also Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And it's said that South Africa has the third highest number of cybercrime victims worldwide, losing about 2.2 billion rand a year to cyber attacks. And it used to be an issue considered primarily for the IT team in a business. These days, it's certainly an agenda item for the entire C-suite. What's changed? Well, it's not just the frequency of media reports on cybersecurity breaches. If anything, these are merely symptomatic of a larger shift underway. I think cybercrime is being fueled by the increasingly sophisticated technologies and the fact that we are just living our business lives increasingly in the online world where everything and every device is connected. Well, to talk about cybercrime in South Africa and how it affects business and how you can respond, we've assembled quite a formidable panel for you tonight. Let's start with my in-studio guests, Rutendo Klatswayo, who's Chief Legal Officer at Zao. Rutendo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Ian Sabir, who's a spokesperson for rapidly growing insurer King Price. Ian, a great pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I think your Chief Information Officer calls himself the Dark Vader, or the Darth Vader of data, doesn't he?
So he's just a legend.
He is a legend. I've seen him present at a business intelligence conference, and he left the entire audience absolutely spellbound, just because it's completely different. That is the King Price motto, though. And on the line, we've got Pindi Mazabuko, who's a cybersecurity expert at Mimecast. Pindi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Kick us off, Pindi. When we look at how much South African businesses are actually losing in terms of cybersecurity, that 2.2 billion figure is something I read in a PwC report. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's definitely accurate. So what we see as Mimecast as well, we did a study recently and published a report in August that looked at the threat intelligence. And what we're seeing is that there is an increase in any form of cyber attack. And mainly in four categories that we've seen, which we can talk about in the later during the conversation now. But and we see that the techniques used by the threat actors are both simple and yet at the same time quite complex as well. Simple in the sense that we see known techniques being used in the market, but also complex, where the threat actors are finding ways and means to avoid detection by the security system.
2.2 billion, how did you arrive at that figure?
I guess it's through the analysis and interviews and studies that have been done. And also with every event that you see that happens through the cyber attacks, definitely results to the business, whether through data loss, or through our customer or supplier losses, and that translates directly to the revenues of the company.
It does sound like an exceptionally large figure, and I recall Warren Buffett in one of his yearly letters to his shareholders at Berkshire Hathaway referring to cyber as probably his number one global risk. So it's something that, for one, we shouldn't be taking lightly, and two, I think because of the cross-border nature of IT systems, doesn't mean because you're on the tip of Africa that you're going to be immune to this global threat. Rutendo, from your vantage point as the Chief Legal Officer at Azao, what are companies most exposing themselves to, and what are the back doors here that need to be looked at in order to head off the cyber terrorists and criminals and those who want to make off with our data and sell it back to us at exorbitant amounts?
Well, I can speak from our vantage point in particular, is that focusing on a niche area allows us to hone in on exactly what needs to be done from a security perspective without actually spreading across our focus and attention to different areas. You find a lot of businesses that have cross sections in terms of what they offer customers are not actually focusing on the core issues at heart. And I'd say, particularly with Ozo, because we are looking at a niche area, which is the EFT payment sector, we've been able to compile a team that has had decades of experience in this area in terms of encryption methods, learnings from different payment methods. So for example, we employ the PCI DSS standard, which is what credit card companies use in terms of their security. But we have also worked with the regulators. We have had discussions with different role players in the industries, including banks and the like, to gain the best learnings to combat cyber attacks as best possible. And given that we've had a 0% fraud rate, that has reaped the great results in our company.
0% is phenomenal. When it comes to dealing with cybercrime, is it possible to predict rather than simply respond to it? Because we seem to have a system that is very reactive in nature rather than trying to be a lot more proactive.
Good question. I think it is it's difficult to predict, but I do think that companies can arm themselves with having, for example, predictive hacking. So you'll have professional hackers, for example, with us, who will continuously test the boundaries of our system. I think it's on a continuous basis, having experts in the field of hacking to try and test your systems to make sure that you're vigilant and not using dated systems that will provide fraud as a very easy avenue to the disadvantage of consumers.
To use the political analogy, it's like having an army of Guptas continually testing your constitutional framework for any back doors. Now, there is also something called cyber insurance, Ian. What in the world is cyber insurance?
Well, basically, cyber insurance is a risk management tool whereby if in the event of a loss, a financial loss, where hackers are able to gain entry to your security system and be able to steal information which causes reputational damage and financial loss, or for example, any natural disaster that could happen, you need to have backups. If those backups are also destroyed, then you need insurance which will be able, in the event of a loss, to compensate for the financial loss that you've had as a company.
Now, don't standard insurance policies cover that kind of thing, sort of business interruption? What makes cyber so different?
Okay, so cyber insurance, basically, it's first of all, it's not cheap. That's one thing. Second of all, you need to have a specific IT department that's there to handle the type of threats that come in. Now, if you get cyber insurance, first of all, to begin with, that initial company can be able to actually advise you on the steps to protect your entire company for insurance purposes. First of all, what a company needs to look at is the first thing we would do at King Price is we look at accountability. So if we have a loss in our company and our clients are now harmed, so the first thing, we need to be accountable. We need to be able to provide feedback to our clients that this has happened. We need to know who to speak to, what to do after this has happened, and what is the contingency plan. Let me put it in layman's term. A normal standard insurance policy, like a home policy. You've got a house, you take insurance to say if someone breaks into your house, you'll get paid out. Now, cybersecurity comes to a sense where now in your own house, for example, you've got now a security gate. That's a step one level of a type of protection to your house, where someone can gain entry and be able to steal your assets. Thereafter, you've got an electric fence. That's a level two protection cover. Thereafter, you've got ADT or any security company that's there to provide that protection for you. So in the event that this person, this hacker, this fraudster is able to gain entry to all through all of those security measures that you have, you need the insurance that will be there to take care of you as a company.
And we'll come back to whether or not you need to insure for specific threats, specific types of cybercrime, or if it's just a blanket general insurance. Pindi, I want to come back to the issue of how much South African businesses are actually spending on cybersecurity. So if we've quantified the quantum that's being lost every year, 2.2 billion rand, how much do South African businesses actually spend on beefing up their gate and their electric fence and the ADT and buying the dog and all the rest of it that goes with, building the firewall higher?
Yes. I do not have exact figures on how much is spent in the industry. However, what we found is that as a cyber resilient company, that most companies, actually the study that we did as well, which was a different study, we interviewed 90% of the attacks usually result from the human error. And what we've realized is that asking the customers that were taking part in the study, how many of those customers were doing user awareness testing, training around cyber security, and we find that 85% were doing it, and however, 25% were doing it on a constant basis. So what we've realized is that when one look at their cyber resilience strategy, then you should not forget including user awareness as well, because that's the last layer of your security. So we rely a lot, and every other system rely on the user decision-making skills around security.
Does anyone else on the panel have any idea how much firms are spending on beefing up their security? Unfortunately not. One would imagine an awful lot, considering that we're losing 2.2 billion rand. Ritendo, I want to look at exactly what form of cyber attacks companies in South Africa are exposed to. What are the attackers after? We know there's phishing and there's malware and there's Trojans and there's DDoS attacks, and we've had the Gupta leaks as a great example of what can happen if your email servers aren't protected and the sort of information that can get into the public domain. What are hackers after primarily?
So I would say, particularly from our vantage point, your data is extremely important and very easy to penetrate if you don't have the right type of training and awareness, as Pindi alluded to. So for one, I think, and this is where consumer education comes in, preying on vulnerable sectors, preying on lack of information, preying on easily identifiable or easily hackable types of web addresses and the like. So consumers not looking for companies that have the relevant EVSSLL certification, that do not have clear markers of being a legitimate organization. I think it's quite easy for hackers to penetrate on those levels.
Ian, I see you nodding in agreement
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I'd like to add on to say, first of all, what you need to look at, not only on a consumer protection or advisory point of view, also look at from the employee side. Mm. Because hackers are able to go through directly through employees. Because if you look at it this way, King Price is a huge company. And now a hacker is able to hack through an employee's email address, where now this information is disclosed to those hackers. They now essentially have information of the company as a whole business entity. They have information of customers, be it 100,000 of those customers. They have employees. They have the details of the employees who are employed there. All those financial records are there. Now, as you mentioned when you started that, now everything you can be able to purchase online. Literally, being on the internet, you can be any person you want. And it's a very big concern. And one thing I might add on to say, let's not only think about educating the consumers. Let's also look at educating the employees, that you know that when you go to a specific company, you know that these measures are there, where this company, these employees are competent enough to be aware of these cybersecurity threats, where they can be able to prevent those type of losses, especially for the consumer in this regard.
Yeah, and you are, you know, as an employee with your email account exposed to all kinds of phishing emails every day. Mm-hmm. Am I going to click on that and expose the company servers as a result?
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Pindi, you mentioned the four areas earlier on. What are the four areas, if we're to help listeners understand how to build a greater resilience and defenses against cyber attacks, what are the four areas they should be concentrating on?
Your guests have already mentioned some of it, which is impersonation attacks. So this is when the attackers are looking at tricking their employees or end users of the system to believe that they're interacting with people that they know, either through impersonating or using similar domains or display names. And we found that employees within the finance department are most targeted for this kind of attacks. We've also seen a highly use of spam campaigns, which is used to mainly propagate the malware into the customer environment. And we've seen, while all of those are known and simple in nature, we've also seen that the attacks themselves are becoming more sophisticated in such a way that they're trying to bypass or avoid detection by the security system, where the files, like encrypted files, are being used to distribute malware, or our files are hidden within a complex and multi-layered structure. We're also seeing that there's a high rise as well and on what we call opportunistic attacks. These are the attacks where the malware itself has been used before and detected before. However, some companies do have relaxed security controls, so they have not protected themselves around these malwares, and therefore they get attacked as well through reinitiation of these attacks.
That's always...
So,
I just want to touch on that issue, because that's always fascinated me. Be absolutely sure that you've cleaned your servers up. Let's say you've discovered an attack. It's a malware attack. Sometimes it can take months to make sure that these attackers haven't established footholds in various other parts of a company network. How thoroughly should one go and clean and sweep one's IT systems following a breach?
No, definitely. I think one needs to go and make sure that they've got rid of the malware itself, make sure that all their servers and system and network are stripped of the malware, and thorough checks are being done. If that means that one gets a consulting company to help them with that, I think that's very important, because if you do not get rid of the malware and it's sitting on your network, you run a risk of reinfecting yourself and running to the issues that you've had.
Coming back to the legal side of the equation here, we also have the Protection of Personal Information Act, PIPEDA. We've got GDPR over in Europe. And Rotendo, you as a company are exposing yourself, if any of your data is leaked, to these various laws as well. How do these need to align to whatever IT security plan you put together?
I think the benefit of when one interrogates these pieces of legislation, they speak to each other. So they're very interrelated in terms of the type of security, the mechanisms you need to have, the disaster recovery, business continuity plans, the type of standards you need to have. So if anything, I think organizations, and I think you were speaking earlier on in the session about how to be more proactive rather than reactive. So looking to learnings like the GDPR, PSD2 is also a standard in Europe, and some of the security standards within there that speak to our local legislation, also help you to buffer your systems, to help you to prevent attacks. So I think if anything, they're more of a positive enactments that a lot of companies should take seriously, even though, for example, PIPEDA is not in force currently, just being proactive in terms of looking at how they speak to each other and how systems can be enhanced collectively looking at these pieces of legislation.
It has been some time that PIPEDA has been there but not
yes,
in force.
Exactly.
We wonder when that will be fully in force in South Africa. Coming back to insurance, Ian, and what's important to consider here, because as you said earlier, it's expensive, number one, and right now in this environment, I think businesses in South Africa are doing everything that they can to cut costs to stay afloat in a low growth environment. How should they be approaching whether or not they need cyber insurance? What sort of means test do they have to do?
Yeah. Okay, so let me rephrase. By expensive, I mean the more security you put, the more money you have to spend. That's a fact.
Yeah.
You know, but it certainly does not mean it's only for the major companies. A smaller company does need cyber insurance. The fact that you work on your phone, you need cyber insurance. You've got a database on your phone. You're always online on Facebook, on Instagram, on all these social media panels, which make you susceptible to these hackers. Now, the other thing is that, or rather, I think what we're all saying here is that it's not a case of should you have cyber insurance or cyber security. It's a case of why don't you have it? Because that's the most important thing. Because if you think about it, if you're running a business and you're dealing with clients, this is something imperative that you need to have, firstly for your business, secondly for the customer's protection as well, and to keep your business afloat. So I must say that we've got a very passive market from my understanding, when it comes to this type of issue. I don't know if it's a case of a lack of education or in this department, but again, it comes back to financial literacy as well. I personally feel, from my years of experience being a student advisor and motivational speaker, is that financial literacy is something that's just not there for our clients. And it starts from a young age, from kids in school. If you go to the majority of schools in the country, leave the suburban schools alone, you find that financial literacy is not there at all, particularly with career guidance. So now, what does this mean? You look at your leaders, you look at people in the, you know, the leaders of the country, basically. Do they have that financial literacy? Do they understand what cybersecurity is? Do they even know what cyber insurance is? You were touching on a point to say, well, look, an employee can get, you know, they can spoof their email. An employee, you wouldn't even know that these are the things that you need to look at. At King Price, what we do is, on a weekly basis, there's always emails, dummy emails that we send to our employees to try and trick them so they get more aware of these things. I must say, I was one of them when I first started because I literally did not know this, you know. And from an employee's perspective, when you mention that because you're at work, you think you're safe, everything is fine, everything's safe. I actually went to my IT department today. I saw one of my friends, Gerard, and he said to me, you know, he showed me his phone. He said, these are the alerts I get daily. It was like close to 1,000 alerts with malware coming in. Remember, these people, these hackers don't get tired. This is their job. As funny as that may sound. But this person literally sits there and works and works and works. So your duty is to make it as tough as possible for them to gain entry. It's not to say that they will never gain entry. You know, in every security department, there's always a way to push through. You know, you may be the best boxer, but there's only so much you can take, so many hits you can take. You can have your security wall, but, you know, eventually, if someone keeps hitting and hitting and hitting, you need to keep fighting back to keep them out of there. So if that happens, have cyber insurance.
And it's, you know, akin to that example you shared earlier of the house. The criminal is always going to target the weakest house on the street.
Sure.
And as everyone starts beefing up their security, there is a certain amount of digital security inflation that creeps in, that your competitors, if they're beefing up, are actually imposing on you on a cost line basis. I want to come back, Pindi, to this issue of proactiveness. And I like the example that Ian used at King Price, where they actually send emails out to their employees. They're trying to be proactive. They're testing their employees all the time. What advice would you have for companies to be more proactive, to help step up their defense in the face of this onslaught of cyber criminals?
Besides user awareness, which I think is quite important because of the set of the breaches that result from human error, I think this user awareness as well, I like what Ian has said, keep them practical, keep them short so that you keep your users interested in learning from in the process. But the easy one as well, which you've seen from the results that we've had, is if there's a security patch that is out there, make sure that you have the latest and greatest of all the security updates in your network, in your system. Make sure that you update it, because that also reduces the risk of you being attacked. And the other one is, we see this quite a lot, where we make our passwords quite easy to figure out. People use our passwords like passwords.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the advice I have there, using the native language and starting to use sentences as your passwords, are also a good way of trying to make your passwords as difficult as possible and difficult to hack. And be careful with your data and make sure that you protect it. I know sometimes you go and work off the office and into a coffee shop, and we connect to the public Wi-Fi, which is not protected. So let's be careful of all of those things and be aware and conscious about that stuff.
It is one of those things that boils down to education. It's amazing, from my vantage point, how the interest in cybersecurity peaks or spikes following a high profile breach. One thinks of what happened at Liberty recently, I think it was well over a year ago, but there was a huge spike in interest, and then it died down again. It doesn't mean that the hackers have gone to sleep. To Ian's point earlier, this is their job, it's what they do, and they're continually innovating. If they're not trying to get onto the Fortnite website, which has been down for 24 hours, but that's a conversation for an entirely different panel. Thanks to my panelists tonight. on the line, Pindi Mazibuko, cybersecurity expert at Mimecast, Rutendo Klaxwayo, Chief Legal Officer at Zao, and Ian Sabir, spokesperson for insurer King Price. That's a wrap from the team tonight. Thanks to sound engineer Tabs Wadebe and producer Andries Mashlangu. Sylvia A is in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town, and in Gauteng, Carolyn Stain up next with the smoothest classics on Winding Down. Good night.